Welcome everyone to the X Factor Files podcast. I'm Daryl.
I'm Philip.
And it is such a
odd weekend.
Yes. I just want to take a nap, even though I slept like 10 hours last night.
I really want to take a nap, and I did not sleep as long as that.
No.
But we're here.
Yeah, it's very cloudy and overcast and a bit cool.
It'll be warmer today than it was yesterday. Yesterday, the high was, or at least the main temperature was like low 60s.
Yeah.
Which I thought was great.
I did like it. Yes.
Today is mid 70s and tomorrow's mid 80s and muggy
and
until storms come through. So in the classic Midwest, like hot and humid until storms.
Yeah.
Hopefully it gets better after that.
Yeah. And we may need to turn on the AC today just to keep the humidity down.
Yeah.
Because sleeping in cool humidity can be miserable sometimes.
When everything's cold and clammy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, Asta is grooming the Ewok stuffed animal.
Yes.
Her friend.
She's probably ready for a nap too.
Oh, yeah. I fully anticipate her roll flopping while we record.
Yeah.
Maybe she'll do the thing where she rolls all the way over because that was adorable.
Yes. And let's see what else happened this week. I mean, aside from horrifying real world things.
Yeah.
I
mean,
I've been reading a lot of the DC Star Trek stuff. I got that short box out last Sunday, and I'm up to issue like 25 or so of the first volume.
Wow.
So it's interesting stuff in how they structure it, that the first volume is written alongside the movies coming out. So the first issue came out shortly after Wrath of Khan, and then they had to work around Search for Spock. Like, I can see why they went with that, so that they could continue the story, sort of thing, just like Star Wars for Marvel did.
And the momentum and the...
Yeah, so like, but in retrospect, you're like, oh, well, I know what happens in like 3 and 4, like, and this is not matching up with that, but you know, they didn't know that because it was in the future for them. So it's interesting sort of shoving something in that area of a movie franchise when you don't know where the movies are going to go at all. And it turns out they're doing a lot of stuff that is just like, that never happened according to what we understand now.
Oh, and you mentioned that there are some of the Star Trek like world mechanics that they either haven't fully established. Like you said that they went to warp 17.
Yes. Like
that's not a thing.
No, it's not. So it's interesting. It's like a time capsule, but in that respect of wow, Trek has evolved so much since they did that. And at the same time, it's just good storytelling too. So even though it's not matching up to what the movies eventually were and how the stories went, it's still interesting stuff to read. It'd be interesting now. I should pitch this to IDW. Similar to what they did with the Star Wars stuff when Marvel restarted that in 2015, going back and doing that for Star Trek. So writing true to in-universe canon stories now between like Wrath of Khan and Search for Spock, what would that look like? What stories could happen with all the knowledge we have now? Because that's how they restarted the Star Wars stuff at Marvel. They're like, all right, for the next 3 years, we're telling stories that happen between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back creating canon that way.
Interesting.
Yeah. So filling in those blanks that have existed forever.
I mean, they are not rebooting.
They're ending.
They're ending the Star Trek.
Next week. This week. In like 3 days with Omega.
It makes me sad.
You've been reading that religiously.
I really like especially the main line and Sons of Star Trek, which I thought did a decent job of like repairing Alexander as a character a little bit. I was really mad about him like going full Klingon again and like them leaning into that choice from DS9 that he joined the Klingon Defense Forces, even though that wasn't terribly in character. So those were really good issues. I might need to reread the whole lore war thing
Oh.
just to like figure out how he got so much power. But I guess the big showdown that's coming up is sort of neat, and we get a little bit more detail on the importance of the orbs
Okay.
is neat. I really like that. Like, it was Orb of Change and Prophecy, and then followed by like in order to blah blah blah, or the Orb of Destruction to blah blah blah. So that I like that aspect a lot, and it sort of like continues as a dive into Bajoran culture too, because I like the alien culture aspect of Star Trek a lot. Someone at It felt really weird going to a party yesterday,
Yes.
or a social gathering.
In Minnesota, like a few miles from Brooklyn Park.
Yeah.
So if people want to check it out on the news, hard to miss a political assassination.
I'm a wonderful person.
You
And
should,
I
yes.
feel like we should take a moment to
Yeah.
say, like, Spigar Hortman was great.
Yeah.
We met her at the state fair, because one of my traditions is going to the education building, and the state senate and state house have like little polls that you can take. And sometimes there are staffers there, sometimes there are electeds there. And we went, I picked up a clipboard, I looked up and was like, oh my gosh, you're Speaker Hortman. It
And she
was
is like,
it
hi.
was right shortly after she did the thing where like a bunch of grow legislators were in their little back room social setting, and then she's like, no, a woman is speaking and there's a mostly empty chamber, we're going to do a roll call where people have to come back in so this person can continue to speak to an actual audience. And like, she brought all those dudes back in, and it was great. She shepherded a lot of really important legislation through when there was a DFL trifecta between Governor Walz in the Governor Mansion and the State Senate and State House.
Yeah,
So,
and that's how, like, there's free school lunches in
yeah.
Minnesota. Like, just really good, like, taking care of people
Yeah.
things.
Earned safe and sick time
Yep.
was a big deal. So
Yep.
you can count your hours for an expanded definition of what you need, if it's mental health, if it's caring for a relative.
Yep. There's a even, like, where I work, it's a separate time bank, even.
Yeah.
Like, I accrue that and my vacation and my sick. So,
Yeah. There's paid family leave. That's a thing. So I don't think anything changed with it this session, or at least substantively. There was talk about, with the Republicans having control of the House, or it's a tie.
yeah.
So Speaker DeMuth followed Speaker Hortman. So there were some compromises that happened. And Speaker Hortman was even like, yeah, I saw my name to this agreement. If I'm the lone DFLer voting for this thing because it was a compromise to actually get things done, I'll do it. Like, that was something that not many other people would do. Like, the Republicans were like, yeah, we're going to protect our speaker from having to do those lone votes. Like, they would figure out some way around it. But Speaker Hortman was bold enough to be like, yep, this is the deal. They're in power. This is the reality of a split government, and we're going to make it work, even if I'm the only one of my party voting for this deal. So she was great. And like, it's such a tragedy and otherworldly. Like, I feel like it's the fact that it happened in Minnesota to someone that we met even in passing and who had such a like significant impact on state politics is throwing us for a loop. So,
Yeah, it was really tough because the first thing I do when I wake up, you look at the phone,
yeah.
and that was the news that was like top of Blue Sky, and I'm like, oh, and that just set the tone for
Yeah.
the entire day where it was just sort of like a down day.
Yeah.
And going to the party, which was fun. With some of the Star Trek gays, it was good to see them.
It's nice to see them in a non-trivia setting where we're not all tired and
Frightened,
crabby because it's 8:30 on a Wednesday night. So like, mixed bag. So that, but the get together was nice. Even with all that thing happening. And to steal Chad from Green Malkin Lane's thing of queer joy is resistance. So, and it looked like that was a gigantic banner at the Minnesota Loons or UFC Minnesota, whatever the soccer team is from Minnesota. We just call them the Loons.
Yes.
Super queer friendly. Their fans are sort of rabid, but in the best ways.
Yes.
And there was this gigantic, like, quilt star thing, but in rainbow colors, and of creating queer joy as an act of resistance or something like that was the message. And it was just so nice to see that with everything that's happening.
Yes.
And what else? Oh, my mom and aunt did a No Kings protest up in northern Minnesota. So I'm sure I'll hear how that went.
Yes. I have the test proof of my book.
Yeah.
Your comment was, I thought it would be bigger.
I thought it was going to be like one of those coffee table books.
Right? Oh, that like this size that I'm holding of another book.
Yeah, okay. Where it's like gigantic.
Oh, no, I wanted it to be
like an actual book that you can take with you on the bus and read.
Yes.
That's nice.
So that came in on Wednesday. So did bookmarks that I'm going to give out at cons.
Yeah.
So
since we'll be at Uncanny and FlameCon.
Yeah. And FallCon here in the Twin Cities.
Oh, yeah.
In the fall in October. So, yeah.
Confirmed, Asta has indeed roll-flopped fully on her side.
Yeah, her head is on the ground.
I think her eyes are closed.
Yes.
She's probably going to do her little, like, munching bun bun dreams. Like, yep. You must be dreaming about eating a treat.
Yes.
Since she's never had one, you know.
Yes.
And would like to experience it.
So what we're here to talk about, it's not Star Trek and it's not Alpha Flight.
What?
So we received a promotional copy from Fantagraphics of Lost Marvels number one, and it's Tower of Shadows. So I heard about this book. I reached out to Fantagraphics and I'm like, we would love to read this because it's right up our alley, honestly. And I have been collecting the Marvel horror stuff randomly. Like, I don't have complete runs of any, like, Chamber of Chills or any of that. But when I find one that's cheap, I'm like, yes, I don't have this one. I have a list of which ones I have handy, because what comic nerd doesn't have such a list for things that they're always looking for?
Do you have the Tomb of Draculas?
No.
Asking you that when I see them at cons.
Tomb of Dracula is incredibly hard to collect in full because, one, everyone loves it. Two, like, first appearance of Blade. And, like, some of those issues are so expensive. Like, dumb expensive. And you're like, really? Okay. Like, even when you run across random issues, they can be, like, $10 an issue.
Yeah.
And it's like, this... No. Especially when Marvel actively reprints that stuff. It's on Marvel Unlimited. They're releasing an omnibus of it this year. Like volume one, they're reprinting because it's been a few years. So this stuff, though, so Tower of Shadows, Marvel has an agreement with Fantagraphics to reprint stuff. And like, this is Lost Marvel's number one. They already have a few planned in the future. And it's not just Tower of Shadows. It's the stuff that Marvel doesn't want to reprint itself.
Oh,
so
I was getting that a little bit from the introduction of like, here's where it fits in culturally, like comic culture wise. There were all these other little horror things before horror got shut down.
Mm-hmm. In the 50s. Yeah.
And I even saw one of them that was at SpringCon, I think. So in the introduction, it talked about one of the publications that Tower of Shadows sort of drew on. Mm-hmm. Like, it walked so Tower of Shadows could run. We saw one of them. It was like EC something.
Oh, EC Comics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was sort of neat to be like, oh, I know what that is now because I read the introduction to Tower of Shadows.
Yeah.
It's a bit sort of a big deal.
And I've heard, so, oh no, I lost his name. The intro is written by, I'm going to get there, Dr. Michael Dean. And I heard him on another podcast describe like, the creation of this volume and everything that went into it. And there are stories that aren't included in here because they were written by H.P. Lovecraft. And they, Fantagraphics and Dr. Michael Dean like went to Marvel and they're like, what's your agreement for like reprinting this stuff from the Lovecraft estate? And the lawyers were like, it could go either way. So they defaulted to not including it.
Which is a shame. But yeah. I hope that they can get it sorted out because it seemed really interesting.
Yeah, because like it, some of the issues are a bit shorter because it's typically like three short stories within an issue.
Yeah, which I wasn't necessarily anticipating.
Yeah. So it's a really well done book. It's oversized and the paper quality is really good.
Yeah. The oversized quality was super great in terms of like there's a lot of text boxes.
Yeah.
So you don't get lost in where you are and you can still appreciate more the art that's in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the colorist did a really neat job of figuring out ways to make certain things pop.
Yeah.
And especially the lead story on the Stroke of Midnight was so well done. Like it took me a while to realize what all was happening. And it was just like a house on top of Scary Island with a whole bunch of stairs. But the fact that you see these two figures in an orange yellow blob, and it's like, oh no, that's not actually the figures. That's the light cast by their car headlights that they're standing in front of. So the placement and construction of the art is super great, super clever. You look at it and you see more detail than the first time you went through it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the facial expressions, some of the like, what? With the full like red enraged contrasting with all the other either monochrome or sort of like bluish tinges on the page. The use of negative space in this issue for like the terrifying nature of a portrait that someone thought was beckoning.
Yeah.
That was really well done. It's like a head and you zoom out a little bit more and it's a head and half of a jacket and then zoom out a little bit more and it's that plus a hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, I can absolutely see how you're walking through a dark and scary house of shadows with only some candlelight. And then those are the parts of the picture that stand out. And you know, there's more to it, but for that moment of like that person's fear, those are the only parts that stick out.
Mm-hmm.
Was really well done.
And this is really filling my desire from the past like 10 years for Marvel to reprint some of the horror stuff from the late 60s and early 70s. And they didn't, in here, they acknowledged that some of these issues had reprint stories in them and they didn't reprint the reprints.
Oh, so, that would explain the varying lengths because I couldn't figure out how they were structured at first. And now that you said that, I'm like, oh, yeah, I did read that in the introduction of they went to a drawer with some old scripts and were like, yes, or, oh, we'll put this back in here. Because
we printed this in the 50s and now we can get away with it again. So I really hope that this whole line is successful in reprinting stuff. I would love to see them start reprinting like some of the Westerns and some of the romance comics that they never will in like an omnibus format. And even Marvel Masterworks, which they're ending that whole volume after like 40 years of like very high quality reprints. So
yeah, like this is a substantive book that you like to feel in your hand. Like,
yeah.
It was a pleasure to read. So,
and you have a lot of great creators. The one thing that was tough for me is the introduction and the biographical stuff is really good, except I wasn't familiar with some of the stuff they're talking about. And I'm like, I need to go back and read this after I read the issues.
Right.
So I know what they're referencing.
It makes sense for like, it's an introduction to get to know who these people are and why their contributions to comics are significant. And some of the photographs of them are cool, of like, here's what they were doing, like looked like in their lives and everything.
Because Roy Thomas does not look the same as he did in like 1972.
I mean, does anyone?
Yeah.
So I started reading the introduction, I think I was in Iowa at the time.
Mm.
But then I conked off because I was doing a lot down in Iowa. And so then after reading the stories, I'm like, oh, this makes sense. Oh, now I know what they meant with like the art choices and the color choices and why it was so good that it needed its own volume like this. It's like you have to put it at the beginning because it's an introduction, but it's definitely worth reading after you read the issues to be like, yes, I get it. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes.
This person was awesome and their work was awesome. So.
One story that I thought was really fun is from the fifth issue. And it's The Demon That Devoured Hollywood.
It's the, oh no, he's half hot comment.
Yes. So basically it's a movie star who was touted as like Boris Karloff Jr. He was always in monster makeup. Except he is actually handsome, and he's like, this is my last monster movie, and then I'm gonna go and demand $1 million per picture, because that's what I'm worth, and it's supply and demand, and I'll get it. So, my last day of shooting is tomorrow, and his makeup artist that does all the phenomenal makeup, because reporters were asking him, how do you do it? And he's like, I'll never tell. And then we find out this makeup artist who looks like Puck a little bit without a goatee is actually an agent of Satan and was transforming him, like actually physically transforming him into a beast each day and then taking it away at night. So while the makeup is applied, half of the makeup is applied for this last day of shooting, the movie star kicks him out and they're like, well, why don't you actually talk about your makeup secrets now? And he's like, I can bullshit my way around this. Sure. And he goes in to like remove the makeup and it won't come off. And then he realizes that he sold his soul to the devil.
Yeah.
And he's stuck like that forever.
Womp womp, which is sort of the theme for a lot of these stories.
It's a lot of it's little morality tales.
Yeah, like you get what you wish for, but is it actually what you want or need?
Yeah,
absolutely not.
Yep.
So the
there's a fun one in the same issue where this boy who had an accident can't really walk. He has to walk with crutches and he gets flown away to this magical world by a gargoyle and he defeats the villain there. They're like, why don't you stay? He's like, no, I'm going to go back to my world. And they gave him the ability to walk again.
Oh.
And then he reappears in his normal world and is found the next morning where they're like, oh, you fell asleep on this gargoyle. And he gets up and walks away. So it was real.
That's good.
Yeah.
There are some others. There was a Beowulf one where there was a ghosty that people were sacrificing a woman to, and so he rescues her and invades the castle, but the ghostie comes back and drives his men mad, and he had killed the previous king and the daughter, but he wants the ring that the king was wearing, but the daughter had taken the ring and jumped out, swam across the moat, and eventually like he has to go back, he has to fight the demon. She appears and gives him the ring as the weapon to fight the ghost demon thing that he had slain before, but it has come back and driven his men mad. So he does, and then he realizes that the ring that he had sought after was a poison ring, and that he is now a ghost, and he haunts to this day the ruins of this country that he had captured and conquered for like a week. So fun, and another story that had like a similar look of like hunky guy in loincloth with a pointy eared hood.
Mm-hmm.
There was Vandal, who similarly got what he wanted, but ended up being trapped and stuck in the tower. Someone who like very Edgar Allan Poe, like he conquered this kingdom, he stole the dead druid king's crown as a way to rule the land. He's like, no, these ghosts keep coming after me. Magician, we need to build a tower. Seal it off. Oh, there's a secret door. And then it turns out that the magician had never left the druid tombs. He had died there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the druid king all along. And so there's no no further way for that guy to get out of the tower in this kingdom, and his people all fled because it's just him screaming in a tower.
And it really runs the gamut from those sword and sandals stories to contemporary things like the movie star, or like I read a couple bickering couple.
Oh yeah, there's a bunch of those.
Bickering couples, big in the horror mag.
Oh yeah.
Industry.
One was pestered by his wife, and then he goes to a bookstore to get more education.
Mm-hmm.
And he found the biography of his life.
Yeah.
Like, here's the winning horses for this day. Oh, he has all this money. Oops, he offed his wife because she was always nagging him.
Yep.
And then a bunch of steel beams fall on his head.
Yeah. He's like, oh, there's nothing after this page. I better get out at this construction site.
Right.
Why?
And he's like, hey, what's happening? And then he dies, and a construction worker sees the book. And he's like, oh, it's a biography of my life.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, child, no.
Yeah. Even there's an alien story in one of these.
It started as a House of Wax. And it's like, okay, like the classic monsters, here we go.
And it was...
One of them looks like Toad.
Yeah. And it's, I think is Quasimodo.
Oh.
Classically.
And it turned out to be aliens.
Yeah, alien reporters who are like, there's nothing worth writing about on Earth.
Yeah.
They're the same.
It's true.
So it's a fun little volume. It's only 8 issues. And like we said, some of them are shortened. And it's not a tough read. They go quick.
They do. And they're fun.
Yeah.
Like fun little romps.
Yes.
And we are big fans of Sven Gulli, who is a horror movie host.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen some, like, So Bad They're Good.
Yes.
Campy horror classics.
Yep.
And his show is fun. There's all sorts of corny jokes. And now he has the Sven Squad.
And a lot of interstitials.
So many
interstitials. It must have been 2 years ago he finally expanded to 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Because for years, like decades, it was 2 hours. And he's up to 2.5. And then once a month, his Sven Squad also gets, it's like a double feature once per month. And they're the hosts for the late night one.
Nostalgia, Feratu, Gwen Gulli, and
the imp. Yes.
Who is like the nephew that's just bad at his job.
Yes.
Again, super corny jokes. But having that like host guide you through it is how all these issues are set up. And at first it's like, oh, the digger.
Yeah.
I get permanent residence, but I get no visitors.
And you see how they changed even within 8 issues where they're like, well, it's not Digger anymore. Oh, it's not this. And finally, it's like the artists hosting their own stories where they're like, I'm at my drawing board and here's the intro to this story.
I'm like, this is a very 60s outfit. Where did the Digger go?
Yeah.
I mean, it was still fun.
Yep.
To have a different host at the beginning of each one.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I'm really grateful that something like this is being curated. That
and well curated, like it's very thoughtful of what's going into it.
Yep.
The choices are like justified and make sense for where this fits in comics history and the significance of it and the significance of the artists and the writers who went on to do all sorts of other fun stuff.
Yes.
So
it's at the beginning of Roy Thomas's career.
There's the editor for Alpha Flight worked on some of these.
Yep, Denny O'Neill.
Because I'm like, I know that name.
Yeah.
It's familiar.
So there are 2 more volumes that have been announced. So the first is Howard Chaykin Volume 1, Dominic Fortune, Monarch, Star Stalker, and Phantom Eagle. So taking a creator's less published things and doing it again. And Lost Marvels number 3, Savage Tales of the 1980s.
Oh.
So.
That sounds like a Kazar thing.
Let's see. The description is, for 13 months in the mid-1980s, Marvel assembled some of its strongest artists and writers to tell gritty, harrowing, and blackly humorous adventure stories, ranging from gangster noir to historical battlefields to the deadly Old West to post-apocalyptic futures. So it's sort of similar to Tower of Shadows. So
yeah, that's a big range.
Yeah. There's a whole paragraph of everyone who contributed, including Denny O'Neill.
Yeah.
And It's reprinting all 8 issues of the magazine's run, and the first time they've seen print since 1986.
What a good year.
Yes, indeed. It's similar to how in main Marvel stuff, where they're reprinting Alpha Flight, and they're finally reprinting stuff after 40 years for Alpha Flight.
Yeah.
So it's, I think, a worthwhile endeavor. The volumes are not that expensive. Like, this is $35.
That's worth it for, yeah, like, the quality of book that it is.
Yeah.
Plus the content.
Yeah.
And like I said, not just the great stuff that's in it, but the introduction that places it all.
Yeah, context really helps.
Yeah.
And that's what you... And you get that to a degree in some of the omnibus volumes, because you have the intros in omnibuses, but it's more like one creator talking about it. This is like really well researched and cited, and
yes,
all that connective tissue as to why this is a whole volume and why it matters.
Yeah. So that was, again, super great, super worth it. It provides someone like me, without a whole lot of comics experience, some of the inherent understanding that other folks who are more well-versed in it just sort of seem to automatically have.
Mm.
Like, I'm always in awe of Chad from Gray Malkin, Mr. Scott Free, Demanda. Like, just the amount of context that they have for a lot of the stories and mm-hmm. the characters and how things all sort of tie together in a way that someone who's new, like, it's sort of intimidating.
It is.
So having something laid out like that in print form mm-hmm. is super helpful. So that is the perspective from the comics newbie.
Well, yeah, I mean, even me, there's so much that you don't know. And volumes like these help you start to understand the wider world. Like, it takes your scope and just zooms out a little bit.
Yeah.
And in not an overwhelming way either.
Exactly.
Because it can be overwhelming. Like, where you're like, take X-Men, for example.
There's so much. And then it's like...
And you're like, but where do I even start? Like, I like Iceman. What do I read? And they're like, well, what do you want? And I'm like, to read Iceman. And it's like, well, you have to understand, like, where to start, and like modern continuity or back in the day, at like, then you're like, I'll just start reading from this random point, which is really the correct answer. Like,
yeah,
just pick an issue and start.
So this is super great in terms yeah. of like,
it's self-encapsulated.
Yeah.
You get to understand some of the creators.
And they're good reads. Like, yeah. It's, if you like Edgar Allan Poe stuff, it's a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I don't know, it's well written. It's well drawn. It's like the inkers are doing the Lord's work.
Yes.
Which makes sense for a horror book to have all the shadows, all the outlines, all the ominous looking things just really pop.
Mm-hmm.
It's super great.
Yeah.
10 of 10. Recommend.
Yeah, I think people should go out and give it a try. And I think since this is being published through Fantagraphics, it's probably not on Marvel Unlimited.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, I can find out real quick by opening the app, because it would be there by now. But
I suppose I should say 10 of 10 Astas recommend.
Mm.
I feel like there was something that was we did that was like 0 of 5 Knicks.
No.
Would do again.
I mean, anytime we have to clip their nails.
It might have also been Section 31.
Oh.
That movie from Star Trek. I like how that was a discussion with some of the Star Trek gays of like, do we get it to complete the collection, even though we never intend on watching it again?
Yeah. So it is not on Marvel Unlimited. I think the first story from the first issue by Jim Steranko is included in like a Marvel Visionaries Jim Steranko.
Oh. Gotcha.
But that is the only actual result for the entire series. So,
wow.
Yeah. So that means you gotta pick this up or request it from a library.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
It is a good coffee table book that yeah. you wouldn't mind like picking up when you read your morning coffee.
Yep.
A little bit, little story here, little story there.
Yep.
they're good reads for, morning coffee or a little something something before bed.
Yeah, like I just need a mental break. Like I've been playing video games and I need to wind down a little before bed and have no screen time.
Right.
Yeah. So again, thanks to Fantagraphics for providing the copy so we could read it.
And very much so. You should go pick it up.
Yeah. All right. So next episode is going to be an Alpha Flight episode.
Oh, far out.
Getting back to that.
Since we had just met Purple Girl.
Yeah.
She has joined the team, even though she's 13, which seems like irresponsible parenting.
Yeah, it does. It seems like some questionable parenting. But she has powers, so we know in the mutant world.
Yeah, like, powers. You're in it.
You're a superhero, right, Kitty Pryde?
No.
And I think that's it. So let us know what you love about some of these horror comics if you've read them.
Yeah. Do you enjoy that format, that Svengoolie format? Or Elvira, really?
Elvira, Tales from the Crypt, same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we will catch you next time.
Be well.
Bye.